everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks. We are midway through Holy Week here as we get ready to move on to Easter, today being the 27th of March. Easter coming seems like early this year. Tom, do you have any idea why the Easter egg or the egg is so important in Easter?
Because it's chocolate. No?
Well, we're going to talk about Easter symbols with Father Robert Hendrickson, our faith and spirituality contributor. That's coming up at 12:30. First, we'll be talking with soon-to-be former Tucson City Councilman Steve Kasacek in a moment. But this is our 14th year with the radio program in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio on 1030 KVOI The Voice, Tucson's only source for local, live local news and talk. We have our worldwide live listening on my website at buckmastershow.com. The live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Let's go now on the live line and talk with Tucson City Councilman Steve Kasacek, Ward 6 Democrat for 14-plus years, has been in that position, but is now moving on and will retire from the council on April 1st. How are you, Councilman Kasacek?
I'm doing well, and I can answer your question about the egg. It's nothing to do with chocolate, although that's good, but mm-hmm. It's a symbol. It symbolizes life emerging from the eggshell, a symbol of the resurrection.
Yeah, I think you got that one, and we'll hear more about that coming up in the second half hour of the program. I understand I saw some pictures, a very nice gathering. A lot of people wanted to say goodbye to you, a little party at the shanty. That must have been very gratifying.
It was. It really validates the work that the staff here at the Ward 6 office has done. These jobs are not, you don't fly solo in these jobs. And just before we start talking about anything else, I want to make sure that I get out there that my staff are the ones who deserve so much credit for the work that we do in this office. And the people who showed up last night, have interactions with them daily, hourly. And so it's them. It's also my wife. I mean, your Ann was a partner in everything you did, and so is my Ann. And they support us throughout all of our professional work, and they're sometimes our biggest cheerleaders. So first of all, thanks to my Ann, and thanks to my staff for what they're doing, or what they've done. The shanty was very cool. First of all, I'm sorry to hear that Bill Nugent, the owner of the shanty, is going through some physical issues, and he's recuperating right now, though, after some surgery. But they opened up for us last night, and we were there from 5 until about 7:30, and it was a jam-packed house. And, one of your colleagues, Dylan Smith, was there with people from the Sentinel, and AZPM was down there as well, another one of your former stomping grounds. And, it was just great. And I think what was perhaps one of the more one of the things that made me the happiest about last evening was just seeing the diversity of the people who were represented at the shanty. I mean, we had residents from some of the neighborhoods that we represent. We had developers. We had people from city staff. We had county staff down there. We had all sorts of from 4th Avenue, from downtown. And seeing that just really made me reflect on the fact that we're a big, small city. And levels of separation are like one and two. We all know somebody who knows somebody who knows somebody that you just met the other day. And like I just mentioned, you work with Dylan, you worked at AZPM, and here we are talking, 14 years later, when we first started these discussions. And so it's great. Tucson is an amazing place, and the people are amazing people. And it was just fun to be able to, kind of interact with folks last night and share some of the paths that we've traveled together.
Before we talk about your future, what about the future at Ward 6? What happens to, say, your staff? What happens to the plastics project and things like that?
Okay. First of all, I'm working with all of my staff members right now on soft landing with other positions within the city. They all have excellent qualifications for some positions that are open right now. They will have that as an option, or the incoming council member would have the option to retain them, and so they have, you know, they'll have options to consider. As far as the incoming person is concerned, we don't know who that's going to be. There will be a process. It will not be an election. What it will be is this: between April 1st and 15th, people can submit their letters of interest along with a resume. They submit it to the city clerk, and sometime late in April, the city council will meet, and the six of them, the five council remaining council members and the mayor, will invite the top four candidates to a publicly open meeting, and they'll make a selection. On Tuesday, April 23rd, there will be a League of Women Voters emceed or sponsored event that will be held at the City Council chambers beginning at 5:30, and all of the candidates who are submitting their names will be represented there, and there'll be a Q&A. League will ask some questions. I'll probably have an opening statement, a closing statement, and some questions. The number of questions, of course, will be a function as to how many people apply. And I already know of more than four people who have at least expressed an interest, and so that'll be interesting to see who tosses their name in the hat. As far as the programs are concerned, and you mentioned the plastics in particular, I met with Kevin Dahl and Nikki Lee yesterday, and gave them kind of a download on you know where we are with that project and. Let them, you know, link them into some biweekly meetings that we have with Bifusion. Very short answer is I would hope that with all the support that this community has exhibited for that program, that it continues on, and by the end of the year, we should have the Bifusion production facility up and running out of the Los Reales campus. And so that one for sure is not going anywhere unless. Well, I don't know, unless what, you know, that one for sure is not going anywhere. We have a lot of balls in the air that we're juggling right now. And, you know, there are some rezoning things that are happening. And there are other initiatives that, I mean, the phone rings all day long. And so we have constituent work that we continue to do and will continue to do until the next council member comes into this office. And, you know, all that's business as usual. I mean, this is, you know, the fact that, you know, I'm kind of taxiing on the runway and heading across the plaza. And Jan Lesher has already put out an APB for me for Tuesday morning. So, you know, she'll kidnap me over there on Tuesday. But until then, it's business as usual. And even after then, this office will continue to function because constituent service is the most important thing that this office does. And we're going to keep that going.
How would you describe your new job with the county, Steve Kasachek?
So I'll be working with county administration. I mentioned Jan Lesher. My direct supervisor will be Carmine DeBonis. He works a lot of the public works programs. My primary focus will be managing the county's role in what's called the Mosaic Quarter Project. Mosaic Quarter is a multi-sports complex that will be located out near the existing Keno Sports Complex. It will include an iceplex. It will include an arena that will have room for 9 basketball courts, and they can change surfaces, so it'll be also for indoor soccer and that kind of thing. There will also be a sportsplex, which will be a smaller version of the arena, and then an outdoor pavilion where they will have room for outdoor events, community activities, and that kind of thing. Also programmed into the development will be roughly 14 restaurants, a couple of hotels, and it is a ground lease that the county will still own the ground, and they're leasing the site. to not development, and not development is going to be the one who's is actually building the project with a construction company called Hensel Phelps, whom I've worked with before at the U of A. So it'll be nice to, in fact, the city council, we approved the rezoning for this area about 5 years ago. It was really at the time sort of a ho-hum. It's a rezoning for a big 88 parcel piece of ground out near Keno. Nobody quite envisioned at the time how massive this project can be. It's got a price tag of north of $400 million, and it's private dollars. So it's going to be really, it has the potential to be a transformational project for this region, not just Pima County, but for the region. Last night, Felipe Garcia from Visit Tucson came down to the shanty, and he and I have had several conversations about this. And from a tourism standpoint, Felipe and his team are really looking forward to this project taking off. You know, youth and amateur sports. They've already spoken to the Ice Cats about moving out of the Tucson Convention Center and moving down to the Iceplex. I know from this job, from the Ward 6 job, having worked with a lot of the hockey moms trying to get ice time down at the TCC, there are people driving up to Phoenix for youth sports, youth hockey, youth ice sports, adult leagues. And so to have that as an option here in Tucson is going to be cool. But we also know that, in fact, I was talking with a guy yesterday who's involved with Coaches for Charity, who runs the MLK basketball program tournament that right now is in McHale Center. And they need venues. You know, we have so much opportunity for youth and amateur sports in this region, and the Mosaic Quarter project is going to really be an answer to that. And finally, I would say this: there are many of us who believe that when the Keno baseball field was built, it should have been downtown. And we have since lost spring training baseball, likely never to return. But having Mosaic literally across the street from Keno will be an opportunity to breathe some life into the existing Keno sports complex. They've got some soccer fields. There will be more opportunity to kind of cross-pollinate incoming youth and amateur sports. And Keno also already hosts some professional baseball with the Mexican Fiesta. So awful lot of opportunities with this going forward, and I'm really looking forward to being a part of it, you know, working for the county.
All right, let's pause right here, and we'll talk with Steve Kasachek about some of the highs, maybe some of the lows of his 14 years on the Tucson City Council. But right now, I'll talk about one of our highs is Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle. Mona's now has that added enhancement where they are serving alcohol now. So you could have a beer with your lunch. You could have some wine. Mona's Danish Bakery at the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. Their website, monasdanishbakery.com. More with Steve Kasachek right after this.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is finalizing a new 20-year plan for RTA board review and approval to seek public feedback on the draft plan. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners trust green things. A family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, midweek edition. Steve Kasachek, Tucson City Councilman, with us on the live line. He is moving on to a new opportunity after 14-plus years on the Tucson City Council. All right, let's talk about, this is kind of your exit interview on the council, and we'll, of course, have you on to talk about your work with the county and the project after you get settled there. But how about some highs and maybe some lows, Steve Kasachek?
Well, just listening to the ads, two of the highs are some of your sponsors. The work that we've done out of this office with the Tucson Wildlife Center to establish relationships between them and, for instance, Tucson Fire, when they do controlled burns. We've got staff from TWC out at these controlled burns out at the Sweetwater facility to make sure that the critters are protected. And Lisa Bates and her team out at Tucson Wildlife Center do an excellent job with the rehabilitation of all sorts of animals, thousands a year. So that was one that just ran through the ads. And the other one of your sponsors is the zoo. Nancy Klug from the zoo, Zoological Society, was down at the shanty last night, and it was nice to see her and to continue to work with the zoo on the international animal conservation work that they do an excellent job with. Is going to be something that I want to stay connected with. And we helped to shepherd the zoo expansion that is right now in process. I do not believe that the council made the right decision on the direction that and the location it's in. But the fact that we are continuing to work with the zoo and the expansion's underway. They just finished World of Play over there. And so that got done, new flamingo exhibit and all sorts of things. So the work with both of those groups has really been meaningful to me. And kind of tangentially to that, early on, working with a lot of animal advocates in the community and having an active role in getting Tucson Greyhound Park actually shut down. A lot of animal abuse in that activity. It's not a sport. And so we, the fact that I had a role to play in that, along with many community members, is meaningful. In addition to that, I would say that when I began this 14 years ago, downtown was not the destination that it is right now. That is not as a result of all of work that I individually did. Again, everything that I can point to is a function of work that my staff has done. And in this case, Rio Nuevo has been a significant part of that. The Downtown Tucson Partnership has been a significant part of that. And credit to the private sector, the small businesses that are down there, the risk takers, the businesses that have invested and trusted in their own vision and the fact that we would come alongside them. The county also has played a significant role in the revitalization downtown. So that's much, much different than it was, 15 years ago. Another thing that's different than it was 15 years ago, and sadly we're coming full circle, is the city budget. We when I began this in 2009, we were facing roughly a $40 million budget deficit. Since then, and largely with the help of Mike Ortega and this as a city manager and his excellent staff, we made some pretty good decisions, and we got to back to the point of a structurally balanced budget, which may sound bland and vanilla, but the fact is that without a structurally balanced budget, you're not able to fund things like police and fire and roads and parks and all the things that we're obligated and are responsible for under our charter. So we got back to a structurally balanced budget. Sadly, because of some of the decisions that have been made up at the state legislature, we are right now facing another deficit, not this fiscal year, but next fiscal year. So the council is going to have to sharpen their pencils along with the new city manager, who's going to be Tim Tamir. And so they've got some challenges ahead. But having navigated that before, I'm confident that if they make good decisions, they can navigate it again. I would point to the Benedictine Monastery as the preservation, and it was a very contentious rezoning process, but in the end, it's turned out to be an excellent midtown apartment complex that has resulted in the preservation of the Benedictine Monastery in perpetuity as an iconic historic landmark in this community. So it's something that my relationship with the owner, Ross Rolney, is very positive now, and he's happy with the way it turned out. Again, you sit down, you butt heads for a while, but you come out of it with a positive outcome in this case. So there is that. This community has some challenges, and I mentioned a couple of your sponsors. Another one of your sponsors is the RTA. This council will have to make a decision, likely later this year, on what role the city of Tucson plays in the RTA going forward. That's going to be a big deal regionally, whether the city participates and supports the RTA Next plan that should go to the ballot in 25, or whether they decide to go it alone. That's something that this city council is going to have to make a decision on very soon. We also have a project in Midtown called the Midtown Reliability Project that TEP, Tucson Electric Power, has proposed, and they're going to do it. It's an upgrade to their existing existing transmission lines, and they're going to the struggle is deciding where those lines are going to go. So again, more community discussion. The city will have to be a player in that decision as well, because there's rezoning considerations. So it's I'm walking out of this feeling as though we accomplished a lot in this office, and I think that the one single thing, if I had to point to one single thing that I'm most proud of, is the way that this staff in this office has handled community outreach, constituent service, and just being responsive. Answer the phone, be courteous, and try and help people with their issues. And that's something that I think this office has done better than any other city council office in this that is out there right now.
So that's a lot on the plate and a lot happening for you. Personally, do you feel pretty good about where you're at right now personally with this change? Change is always hard for anybody, as we know, but you seem to feel very relaxed and about moving forward. It's a big change.
It is a big change, and a little bit of it is going full circle. I mean, as you know, when we first met, I was walking across campus to your office over at the Modern Languages Building and doing interviews with Arizona Illustrated, which you should take full credit for birthing. The fact that the job I had in intercollegiate athletics was 32 years of helping to manage sports facilities and also capital construction projects. That's, in essence, what sort of the direction I'm heading right now. And I'll be fully candid. I would like to see the county job morph into helping their new director out of the Keno Sports Complex to manage that facility as well. So those facilities as well. So, yeah, I mean, you're right. I mean, change is change, and that's it's never easy. It's what I think one of the real challenges is that over time you I think we all accumulate stuff that we don't need, but it's stuff that, you know, now you have to find a home for. And so that if you were inside my house right now, you'd see a whole lot of things piled up looking for, you know, looking for places for us to put them. So one of the challenges my wife and I will have is purging, and that is purging the stuff that we've just accumulated over time, and keep what's necessary and meaningful and throw away the stuff you haven't touched in 5 years and never will again. But I'm looking forward to moving into the county administrator's office and working with Jan Lesher and Carmine DeBonis and the staff over there. They've got a quality staff. I know from having spoken with them and with Mike Ortega, our city manager, that they've got a top-drawer group of folks. And I know you've got a good rapport with Jan as well. And I think you would share the reflection that she's a top-of-the-line county administrator, and I'm looking forward to working over in that office.
Yeah, she'll be our Friday Focus interview a week from this Friday. We're still working on a guest for Friday. Congressman Grijalva is recovering from pneumonia. Wish him well. He will not be with me as planned Friday. So we'll have a guest, though. But anyway, I want to wish you all the best, and I'll give you a little while to get settled. Then we'll maybe bring you in for one of our Friday Focus interviews, something like that. How's that sound?
I would love to be allowed and able to give you updates on how Mosaic is coming along.
Love to.
It's going to be an amazing project for the region.
Love to. All the best to you. Talk to you soon, Steve Kasacek.
Thanks, Bill. And you're a consummate professional and one of the last living ones here in the radio industry here in Tucson. So all the best to you as well. And I appreciate all the opportunities you've given me to share with the public over the last...
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade, using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com. Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show midweek edition of this Holy Week 2024. We'll be talking more about that in a moment. But first, we are in the Green Things, Zocalo Village Studios, the plants at Green Things. I don't talk to plants. Well, maybe I should talk to my house plants. I've heard that can actually help with their growth. Along with classical music. I heard that somewhere too. But anyway, Green Things, located at 3384 East River Road by the Rito River. I was going to say that if I could talk to the plants, they'd probably tell me that they're very happy lately with the nice moisture we've been getting. And again, I've said it before, not too hot, not too cold. This winter and early spring, and just the right amount of moisture, and that makes those plants very happy. Where I'm going with this, well, how about doing some spring gardening and going to Green Things and check it out, 13-acre site, everything you need for the garden. And their sister business is Zocalo Village with all that wonderful pottery from Mexico, the Talavera pottery. They even have some pottery from the Isle of Crete. So they will go to the ends of the earth to find wonderful pottery for your indoors and outdoors for your gardens. When we do our telephone interviews, and we're doing both our major interviews today via telephonically, and that is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Let's go on the live line now with my friend, Father Robert Hendrickson, the pastor at St. Philip's in the Hills Episcopal Church, where I'm a proud member. Father Robert is our faith and spirituality contributor. We've got 24 contributors, and he's one of them, and I'm very proud of it. Hey, Father Robert, how are you?
I am all right. How are you? I've actually spent the last few days sort of going through plants that we got at Green Thing. So I feel like, you know, you should get a little something for that. You know what I mean?
Hey, is that on Facebook? I saw you had the truckload of green things. Those, they had Green Things written all over them.
Yes. Yes. The whole reason I bought that truck is to prepare for Holy Week every year, loaded up with flowers and trees and plants.
Yeah, I want to talk a little bit to begin with about symbolism. When people talk about symbolism with Easter, certainly the egg comes to mind. And I did a little research that early on, maybe you know this already, I wouldn't be at all surprised, that Christians abstained from not only eating meat, I didn't realize that, but also eliminated eggs during the Lenten season prior to Easter. Therefore, Easter was the first chance to enjoy eggs and meat after kind of the long dry spell. Did you know that?
Well, yeah, I did. You know, it's funny. Everyone always says the church is so behind the times. We were the first ovo-lacto vegetarians. You know what I mean? So,
yes. So, so eggs are also kind of the symbol of that. The obvious one would be kind of birth and rebirth, but there are others, right?
Yeah, so I mean, one always wonders whether the explanation for the symbol comes after the symbol, or you know how that works exactly. But there's also the notion that the egg sort of represents a tomb, and sort of, you know, opening the egg up represents sort of Jesus coming out of the tomb. That's sort of one of the interpretations. You know, and there's lots of others, you know, that's sort of interwoven in that, because the notion is that with the kind of intersection theologically of Easter is with spring, right? So this springing up of new life intersects with the sort of church's theology of new life and the resurrection, which so all those symbols of new life become sort of associated with Easter and with spring. You know, rabbits for, you know, sordid reasons are known for as a symbol of fecundity and new life, and eggs and all that, flowers, all those sorts of things that not only become symbols of spring historically, but also are all the things that we sort of also associate with Easter in different ways.
Yeah, and of course there'd be the other symbols, the lily, flowers.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
And then, of course, well, you kind of mentioned the rabbit. I guess that's part of a, I looked this up just today, German Lutheran folklore. Did I quiz you, or did I stump you on that one?
No, so it's a rabbit.
You're a hard guy to stump. I know. Go ahead. Yeah.
It's a rabbit that goes around laying eggs, if I remember properly, from sort of German folklore.
Yes.
I can't remember. It's Osterhase.
Exactly. Judge, that was part of the Easter, H-A-R-E, however that is pronounced.
Yeah.
Judge children's behavior at the beginning of the Eastertide season. There you go.
I need more creatures in my life judging children's behaviors. I keep my kids in line.
Yeah, you got plenty of the creatures at home. You know, when it comes to animals, you have a very animal friendly home. Let's talk a little bit about how are you feeling this Easter season, Father Robert?
Well, I'm feeling it's funny, every year sort of, as I always say, sort of Easter sort of catches us by surprise in some ways. You know, when this year, it's a little earlier than normal. So maybe that's part of why we're getting caught by surprise. But I think, you know, because Palm Sunday arrives in this kind of abrupt way, sort of launching you into Holy Week. And then, you know, the story of Palm Sunday itself is so abrupt. You sort of come in this kind of joyful celebration and you then hear the you know, chanting or reading of the Passion, and you leave church sort of in this very, you know, this kind of sort of emotionally sort of jarring kind of service. And then you're sort of pitched forward into the kind of mysteries of Holy Week. And so every year sort of catches me off guard a little bit. But I think part of what also catches me off guard is the promise of it is so sort of radical and revolutionary. And in a culture where we're sort of, you know, constantly sort of bemoaning how things are, and sort of people are so angry with one another, and all this, to me, it's sort of this sort of Easter stands as this sort of real marker of God's deep love for the world and for humanity, and it's sort of calling us to sort of have that same kind of love for one another. And we get that command this week, and on Maundy Thursday, which is comes from the Latin word mandatum, which means a command. The scripture that's read this Thursday is, I give you a new commandment to love one another, which is said at the Last Supper. And you know, so if people take seriously sort of the story of this week, it's the story of God commanding us to love one another, being willing to go to the cross for that love, and then, even more importantly, sort of triumphantly saying that death is never the end, and returning for the sake of that love. So it's really that's what's unfolding this week, that story of God's love. So it's hard not to sort of go into this week, both if you work in a church, a little anxious about you know, making sure all the bulletins are printed, but also a kind of great deal of anticipation and excitement, because it's sort of a cosmic reclaiming of a life, and sort of refocuses our attention on what's important and what's big and substantial and cosmic, and kind of takes our minds off of the kind of petty stuff that's so easy to occupy us.
It is the day we celebrate Jesus Christ rising from the dead, but some may be saying that are listening right now, Father Robert Hendrickson, what does that have to do with me, and why does it matter? Two very important questions.
Well, I think the first thing is, you know, anyone who's going to die should be interested in the resurrection.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's just that very basic sort of fact, you know. But, you know, and more than that, I think what it says, what it has to do with each of us is Christ doesn't rise from the dead for no reason, right? He rises as the first fruits of those that slept. In other words, the first one who does this thing that is a gift for all of humanity. And that does two things. A, it gives you that kind of hope of kind of an eternal communion with those we love. But second, it also says something about the dignity of you as an individual and of your neighbor. Because, you know, if God is willing to do these things, to sort of go to the cross and then come out of the empty tomb on behalf of your neighbor, then how can we not hear that commandment to love one another as a deep, deep call in our soul that's sort of beyond sort of platitudes, that's actually something about who we are as people and how God sees us as people. And that, to me, that's a sort of an essential part of the resurrection. It's not just a kind of restoration of a kind of, you know, of physical bodies, but it's also a reclaiming, a kind of resurrection of the way we see one another, too. That's just as important in terms of how we, as Christians, respond to this story.
All right, let's pause right here. We're talking about Holy Week, and we're talking about the upcoming celebration of Easter with Father Robert Hendrickson at St. Philip's in the Hills Episcopal Church, where he is the rector. We'll be right back. It's Buckmaster, our midweek edition. Be right back.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We are also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation improvements in the region, averaging more than $100 million in tax revenue each year. The RTA is preparing a new 20-year plan for public review prior to a May 2025 election. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Bill Buckmaster with you in the driver's seat, and Tom Fairbanks on the other side of the glass, making sure everything is running very smoothly. Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico is a great place to get away to this time of year with the beautiful greening of the Gila National Wilderness. There's a lot to do, not only the outdoor activities, but some beautiful buildings to admire and in some cases to visit. The Victorian architecture in Silver City is outstanding. It's only about a three-hour drive east of Tucson. Their website will tempt you with all sorts of activities. SouthwestNewMexico.org is the website. Find out about things to do, great places to stay, and some great places to sample New Mexican cuisine, where the question usually comes down to, do you want the chili the red or the green? And I think I would go with the green right now. Father Robert, what would you prefer when it comes to the Mexican food? Would you go with the red or the green on your chicken enchilada?
Green, absolutely green.
Mm, I agree with you, my friend. Father Robert Hendrickson with us on the live line, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Very busy week for rectors all around the country, and especially for Father Robert, because St. Philip's in the Hills Episcopal Church has a large congregation, and there's a lot to think about as he plans out the remainder of this Holy Week. This time of year, the news media likes to focus, Father Robert, on how are Americans feeling about religion? It seems like these polls are always timed to come out right around Easter. The latest one I have in front of me, majority of Americans say religion is losing influence in public life. This is from the Pew Research Center.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that, whether someone thinks that's a good or a bad thing, it's probably just a fact. You know what I mean? You know, and I think, but either either side can sort of say well, that's probably a fact. You know, I saw a picture from Holy Week in I think it was the 1960s, and there, you know, the Empire State Building had across the full height of the Empire State Building on the side of it for the whole all of Holy Week.
Wow!
Now that would be unthinkable now, right?
Yes.
You know what I mean? It's just unthinkable, right? So even things like that are purely symbolic are kind of fading away. But then I also think that you know it's the kind of notion that the church can sort of, you know, command certain kinds of voting or anything like that, I think has largely in many places sort of faded away as well. You know, so I think there's probably some truth to that. To me, the benefit of that is that it actually allows the church to rediscover a kind of a sense of humility about its identity and who it is and what it's about, and also sort of can be a little more honest where we have failed. Why have we lost influence in public? What is it about the church? And it doesn't take much. It doesn't take much digging to find stories that sort of, you know, shock the conscience in some cases, to recognize, yes, the church has lost influence. And I think it's in part because we didn't take seriously the other part of our story, which is that people commit sin, right? And the church is full of people, you know? And so, so how do we hold ourselves accountable, in the way that I think culture is in some ways holding us accountable right now? And so I think it's all, yeah. Short answer, yes, Bill, it's true.
Yeah, and then along with that is what has been noted as a significant decrease in religious service attendees over the past two decades in the United States. Now, that doesn't necessarily say that that these people are less spiritual. I mean, it's kind of a weird one, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, and part of the challenge, you talk about sort of declining influence of the church. I mean, my son's diving practice is scheduled at 2 o'clock on a Sunday, or one of them is at 1 o'clock, one's at two, right? So if you do go to church, you better go to the early service, and if you're driving across town, you better drive fast, but lots of stuff gets scheduled in the mornings, right? Sort of Sunday morning. So just there's just the simple practicalities of being able to get there. But I would also say, you know, it wasn't that long ago that having, say, one working parent was the norm. And now if you've got two parents working, they're working odd schedules, people are exhausted by the time they hit the weekend, you know? And so I think that there's just that, just the simple practicality that everyone's more pressed and busy these days, and that more things are scheduled on Sundays than used to be scheduled on Sundays. But, you know, at a deeper level than that, I also think people are just being a little more honest about what's important to them. I mean, I do think that they're, For a long time, when sort of church numbers and attendance were swelled a little bit, I think in some places that was as much a social thing as it was a religious thing.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a real estate agent, where do you go to find good clients? Well, go to church on Sunday. We've got a whole room full of them. You know.
Yeah.
So I think there was some of that kind of stuff in the past that I think has largely faded away. So I think, you know, the thing I keep saying about the kind of narrative about the kind of decline of church and all this sort of stuff. Is actually, I think what it is it's a refocusing and perhaps a period of more spiritual honesty, where people are less certain about what they believe. They're more sort of in all kinds of different places and able to say that publicly in a way that would have been kind of unthinkable not that long ago, to sort of say, well, I'm not sure what I believe, or I don't believe in Christianity or whatever it is, or I don't believe anything. That stuff kind of pushed you at the social margins not that long ago. And that's not the case anymore. So I think there's still lots of layers to these different aspects of this, whether it's attendance or religiosity or all that. And I think it's more complicated than just any one of them is probably an insufficient explanation.
Well, getting back to our theme, the overriding importance on these public surveys is that Easter really boils down to being the difference between life and death. And without Easter, Father Robert, we have no hope.
That to me is and that's why I sort of center my own sort of Christian hope. And what I come back to all the time on Easter is all the different stories of the disciples, right? Every one of the disciples except one went on to be martyred sort of somewhere around the world, whether it's Africa, India, Rome, wherever, or sort of across the globe. I mean, sort of as far as the kind of known world, they were traveling, most of them being martyred at the time. And some of them 30 or 40 years into their ministry. Now, you don't spend 40 years of ministry risking death halfway across the world for nothing.
Yes.
You know what I mean? So to me, there's something about that early witness of those disciples that should tell us something real happened there. Because it's not just a psychological phenomenon. It's not just a sort of, a nice story they told one another. Or something happened there that sparked that kind of devotion. So I think part of our faithfulness today is how do we claim that spark in our own lives, sort of have that kind of deep devotion and sort of carry that story forward, which is, I think, what Easter does is that sort of annual reminder of that this thing is at the heart of our faith together. And it's a story still worth telling. And it was a story that so many thought was worth dying for. And we have to decide whether it's worth living for.
Well, you've set the table for my final thought and question for you. How do we stay focused on the resurrection throughout the year?
I think a big part of it is sort of, it sounds a little trite, but there's it's so easy right now to sort of get sucked into sort of negative cycles, whether it's not news or sort of whatever it is. And I think sort of forcing ourselves to look for signs of resurrection, to look for signs of hope, to sort of discipline our spirit and our mind, to look for what is good and holy and right in the world. Scripture says whatever is holy, just, beautiful, keep your mind fixed on these things. That's part of our charge, right? Because I think that the more we sort of constantly focus on the sort of darkness of the world, the sooner we find ourselves sitting in the darkness. You know what I mean? And I think part of our own challenge is to remain fixed. As Scripture says, let our hearts remain there, fixed there where true joy is to be found. And it's certainly not in the news cycles of the day. So I think we need to sort of reorient our own priorities, right? So for me, this spring, my resolution this year was to read Scripture each week more than I read the news, right? I'm not saying I'm going to read the whole Bible every 3 days or something. Yeah. I mean, it was just a very small commitment to say, and I think we all need to sort of have that kind of discipline about where we give our attention to.
All right. Father Robert Hendrickson, want to wish you well for the remainder of this always busy Holy Week. Thank you, Father Robert.
God bless you, Bill. We'll see you soon.
Thanks very much, Father Robert Hendrickson, the rector at St. Philip's in the Hills Episcopal Church. All right, that's going to do it on behalf of Father Robert and Tom on the other side of the glass. I'm Bill, and we all wish you well.